This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Democrats cook the books on everything. We're going to talk about why as it pertains to crime and other things here. We have Senator Eric Schmidt joining us. Is Adam Schiff actually going to go to jail? More Supreme Court news. All that coming up on I'm Right. Okay, let's have a discussion about crime, violent crime in blue cities, why it's so rampant, what's going on, and let's have a discussion that may get uncomfortable about police agencies, large police agencies in the United States of America. First, let's get a couple basics out of the way. First, basics you already know, you watch this show all the time, we don't have to rehash the entire thing, but just for the purposes here, Democrats are not Democrats, they're communists now. They are fighting a revolution. They are not political, they are religion. They are fighting a revolution against everything. And part of fighting a communist revolution is the use of violence. Not just them, you just want violence everywhere in society to increase. Destabilizes things, makes society more ripe for revolution. Thus, open up the prisons. Open up the prisons. Now, one of the main ways the communists do this in this country is through this cashless bail thing. Here was Trump talking about it.
This dire public safety crisis stems directly from the abject failures of the city's local leadership. The radical left city council adopted no cash bail. By the way, every place in the country where you have no cash bail is a disaster. That's what started the problem in New York, and they don't change it. They don't want to change it. That's what started it. In Chicago, I mean, bad politicians started it, bad leadership started it, but that was the one thing that's central, no cash bail. Somebody murders somebody and they're out on no cash bail before the day is out.
No cash bail. So let's talk about this. And this is something that it can make people squirm in their chairs, right? Because we're about to separate society, separate human beings. We don't like doing that, especially as Americans. Everyone's equal, right? But let's be honest. The reason traffic was bad on your way to work or school this morning is not because all the drivers on the road are stupid or selfish. 5%, 10%, stupid, selfish. It only takes a small percentage to ruin traffic. Why do you have to sign 8,000 disclaimers when you go to the doctor's office? Is it 100% of the patients who are morons, sue happy, all those things? No, 5%. 10%. Why does your kid not learn as much in school as you think they should? Is it because the whole class is a bunch of hooligans and dummies? No. It's 5%. 10%. Whenever you are at any place in your life, you will discover it's a small percentage of society, the bottom of the barrel, who ruin it for everybody. And it works the exact same way with crime. You don't believe me? I suggest you go get to know some cops. I am friends with many of them. A cop who is well-established in an area, well-established in any area, they will tell you when they hear of a crime. A cop established in an area will hear that somebody stuck up a convenience store. That cop will usually be able to give you a short list of the people and or groups responsible for that crime. Why? They know who the bad guys are. I mean, we act as if criminal justice is complicated, and don't get me wrong, some parts of it are complicated. What do we do after we catch them? How do we stop them from being that? I get that, but overall, criminal justice is not that complicated. If you want to stop crime, find the criminals. It's a small percent. Find the criminals, arrest them, and keep them in prison, period. Once they're locked in cages, people don't get hurt anymore. Society gets better and safer. If you let them out of those cages, they'll go on and they'll hurt more people. Why would Democrats fall in love with something like cashless bail? Because it allows animals to commit crimes, walk into jail, sign their name on a piece of paper, and turn around and walk right back out. The point of bail, after all, in part, is to keep you inside so you're not outside hurting people. Naturally, Democrats hate that because why? Because they're not Democrats, because they're communists. They want people hurt. Now, here's the problem if you're a communist. That's not going to be popular. And don't delude yourself into thinking these Democrats, they don't know what's going to happen when you turn the serial rapist loose from jail. They know what's going to happen. They want it to happen. But That doesn't look good, right? No matter what society you're in, it's very hard to run for office on the, hey, I'm pro-crime. That's a tough platform to sell. So they lie like this.
Well, first, let's just look at the actual numbers. In Washington, D.C. and all across the country, crime was going up during Donald Trump's first term. And when Joe Biden became president, crime started to come down. In fact, it's been coming down precipitously in Washington and in cities all across the country. So it's just not true, the allegation that they are making.
Crime's been going down. Crime's been going down, huh? I mean, they've been taking this stance for a while now. Remember when Dome got crushed on stage when she was debating Donald Trump? And of course, because the GOP is suicidal, we allowed a communist named David Muir to moderate the debate, and he jumped in and said this.
Crime here is up and through the roof. Despite their fraudulent statements that they made, crime in this country is through the roof. And we have a new form of crime. It's called migrant crime. And it's happening at levels that nobody thought possible.
President Trump, as you know, the FBI says overall violent crime is actually coming down in this country. But
they were defrauding statements. They didn't include the worst cities. They didn't include the cities with the worst crime. It was a fraud. Just like their number of 818,000 jobs that they said they created turned out to be a fraud.
Credit to Donald Trump for giving it right back to that dirty communist. But you saw what he tried to do there. Oh, well, the FBI said violent crime's going down. Anyway, let's move on. We'll talk to her right there. Well, see, the communists are in a bit of a pickle when you're turning the jails loose, when you're turning the animals loose onto society. People don't like it. So you have to lie about it. But when you lie about it, you see, this is where institutions are so critical for a society. Institutions keep liars in check. It's one of the main things institutions do. If you're a communist who's caused violent crime to go up, you have to worry about the FBI and these major police agencies, you know, NYPD, places like that. If you're lying about crime, you know these institutions will step up and say, nah, that's a lie. These guys are all committing crimes. Crime's going up. It's a lie. It's a lie. It's a lie. So what to do? What to do if the institution is there to stop your lies from moving forward? Conquer the institution. You don't stop lying. You certainly don't stop turning the criminals loose onto society. If the FBI is in your way, you conquer the FBI. Barack Obama did that. He spent 8 years filling up the FBI with committed communists, promoting them through the ranks. They have since promoted others through the ranks. Now the federal police force is completely communist and against you. They are the enemy. What to do? What to do if the NYPD is going to be honest about crime? Well, communists run the city. Communists choose the police commissioner. Communists will get to choose the leadership of the NYPD. Doesn't matter how wonderful and brave the guys on the ground are trying to stop the crime, simply take over the leadership and lie about the crime statistics. The communist will constantly run into walls because he's selling something demonic, destructive, and evil. He will then have to find a way over or through that wall, and the most efficient way to do that is conquer the institution that stands in your way. And rest assured, right now, communists are very afraid of what Donald Trump is doing in D.C. for a couple different reasons. One, what if he solves the crime? What if Donald Trump actually fixes crime in D.C.? All these crime stats are going down. How would that make all the other D.C., all the other cities, how would it make them look? And let's be honest with you. Let's be honest here. If Donald Trump starts putting violent criminals in jail, who's going to vote for Democrats? That's why they're on MSNBC talking like this.
Lies can only take him so far. Right. He's hoping that with this presence of these troops, he likes, you know, the protests this weekend were peaceful and the No Kings protests were peaceful. He's hoping for a George Floyd 2020-like situation in D.C. where he can then use that to manufacture another emergency so we can expand power, because what we're seeing is that he governs by emergency, not by popular mandate, right?
And he gets to define the emergency.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, he just declares, you know, I hereby declare emergency, and that gets to do whatever he wants, right? But in reality, there is no There is no crime emergency that can't be handled by local law enforcement.
What's that guy really worried about? Fascism? Donald Trump taking over everything by emergency? No. That guy understands that if you start taking violent criminals, you lock them in cages and you keep them locked in cages, the streets will be safe and the American people will slowly, maybe, begin to wake up and realize voting for Democrats is the only reason America's cities are filthy and full of crime. And if you stop doing that, crime disappears. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have a wonderful show for you here. We're going to talk to the great senator, well, there aren't many of those, from the state of Missouri, Senator Eric Schmidt. Before we get to the senator, let me get to you and how you sleep at night and how you wake in the morning. How do you feel when those eyes of yours flutter open in the morning? Do you feel rested? Or was it yet another restless, crappy night's sleep? Stressed about yesterday, stressed about tomorrow. Stop living like that every night. Start getting something in your body that'll have you relaxed and sleeping without drugs. No more pills, no more drugs. Dream Powder from Beam is a cup of delicious hot chocolate. They have several flavors. I'm personally a cinnamon chocolate guy, but you do you. I have a cup of hot chocolate before bed, only it's special hot chocolate. Has all these things in it that just relax me and put me to sleep. Wake up every morning ready to take on the day. shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. Well, there's more good news out there. At least I think there's good news out there. Bad and good. Tulsi Gabbard, DNI, came out and said, hey, more than 40 more security clearances are being revoked for these, I don't even know if we can call them intelligence people, intelligence professionals, for, quote, abused public trust by politicizing and manipulating. That sounds bad. Who's going to jail for that? Joining me now, one of the great senators, very few good senators we have, Senator Eric Schmidt from the great state of Missouri, and author of the book, The Last Line of Defense. My goodness, do we all need to learn about that, beating the left in court. Okay, Senator, you have an op-ed now talking about prosecutions for this Russiagate hoax stuff. Obviously, I've said over and over again, I believe this is critical for the United States of America. If you can't go to jail for cooking the books and using the CIA to attack your Republican opponent, then you can't go to jail if you're in government.
Right. No, I think that we've gotten, you know, now these disclosures from Tulsi Gabbard, and you've got the breadcrumb trail now to indictments. That's how I feel about it. And also, and we can walk through that, but I also think if you want to understand why they were so hellbent on making sure President Trump never got back in office, this is it. Because they knew that Hillary Clinton worked with the Soros organization to come up with a distraction from her email problems. They knew that the Steele dossier was fake. They knew President, or at the time, Barack Obama authorized spying on a political candidate. They knew they doctored the books on the Intelligence Committee report, even though they knew it was a BS story. And then they continued to use that to try to sideline his first administration. They continue to use it. By the way, we talk about it in the book. When we took the deposition of Elvis Chan, they used that as a predicate for, you know, the Hunter Biden laptop, keeping that quiet because they claimed it was a Russian hack and leak operation, even though they knew it was true. So the punchline is, I think that, you know, the statute of limitations may have expired on some of this stuff, but it doesn't expire on a conspiracy. And I think that's where the indictments ought to go. There should be indictments, this conspiracy. So if you're Clapper, Comey, or Brennan, I'd make sure you're lawyered up because that's where this thing's going.
Okay, you say that's where this thing's going, and I know you are a man of your word. It's one thing for me to get on television and scream someone has to go to jail, right? Every American feels that way. It's quite another to actually prosecute and convict and put them there. Yeah. How do we go about doing that?
Well, I think, again, when you're dealing with a conspiracy, when you light the fuse at mile marker one, you're responsible for the things that happen, even if you're not directly involved, in mile marker 10. And I think that's, again, the most likely scenario of where we would see indictments here is a conspiracy, potentially to defraud the United States. Because if you think about what they were doing, this makes Watergate like look like child's play, or at least what people wanted everyone to believe about Watergate. This was about sidelining somebody from ever being elected in the first place. And then when he was elected, in something they knew was false, they tried to get rid of him there and try to diminish his presidency. And again, we saw the lawfare that followed after that once they demonized President Trump and he delivered the greatest political comeback in American history. So the conspiracy, I think, is the angle here. And I hope we see something from that. I think the time has come.
You mentioned Elvis Chan, and I'm glad you did. He's somebody, people who watch this show are very familiar with him. I understand we have statute of limitation things and things like that, but we have a former FBI special agent on camera bragging about campaigning for Democrats as an FBI special agent. That's essentially what he did. How can we go on without people inside the walls of the FBI seeing the inside of the walls of a prison? Being at the FBI cannot be a license to commit crimes, and clearly the people at the FBI think it is.
Well, and one of the things, and the reason why I wrote the book, Last Line of Defense, How to Beat the Left in Court, you can go to Amazon and get it right now, released yesterday, is to walk people through what was it like to take his deposition? What did we find out? What was it like to take Anthony Fauci's deposition? Because we brought the Missouri versus Biden lawsuit, which exposed the censorship enterprise before Elon Musk had even bought Twitter and Twitter files and the congressional investigations. And what we found, Jesse, was this leviathan of government agencies that were turned against the American people. If you had the wrong opinion about masks or the wrong opinion about vaccines, or you had an opinion about the election in 2020, the government was working directly with social media companies through secret special portals to silence millions of voices. That's the truth. And I think what we're seeing now is, so these kind of things are exposed. What the book is about is, you got to stand up and fight back. We fought back on the vaccine mandate we took at the Supreme Court, we won. We fought back on the student loan debt forgiveness case, we took that to the Supreme Court, we won. We filed Missouri versus Biden, and we were successful ultimately getting the truth out. We sued 50 plus school districts in Missouri for the mask mandates, and we won. We took on ESG, and now that's in retreat. We took on DEI and CRT, and we won. So if you got the courage to stand up and fight back, and you talk about this a lot, we can do anything. The people are with us. The law is on our side. Common sense is on our side. So this book, Last Line of Defense, is a playbook for not just the stuff that we did, but the fights that are ahead. And I think it's important to tell that story.
Senator, you mentioned the NGO connection, the cartel we have going where the government essentially, it knows it can't censor, but you just give out grants, work with a private company, and you find... Now, that has to be against the law, but that's a whole different nut to crack. Can that be cracked? Because obviously our freedom of speech can work against us when it comes to things like that, but we can't have Democrats colluding with private corporations to crush the rights of American citizens every time they take office.
That's right. And, you know, these names like the Institute for Peace and the National Endowment for Democracy and all these ridiculous things, we need to totally get rid of these things. They need to be defunded. One of the things I'm most proud of is I handled the rescissions package in the Senate. And we clawed back $8 billion for all the ridiculous stuff like, you know, the DEI in Burma and Sesame Street in Iraq and Guatemalan sex changes. It was money. I mean, it's $8 billion. But it was also, we demonstrated the political will to do something about it. We'd not done rescissions like that in 30 years. It's the first really kind of its kind. So my hope is there's more of those things. But we got to root this stuff out, because this NGO nexus with the government, they sit, like, it's fueled violations of free speech. It's fueled censorship. It's fueled mass migration into this country. They give it to these entities. Then they go around and send everybody through the back door, and then the government claims they don't know anything about it. This is a true quote-unquote threat to democracy. It's not President Trump. The reason why he was the threat to democracy to them is he wanted to disrupt this stuff, and I think that's our mission. I believe that firmly. And again, the reason why I wrote the book, Last Line of Defense, was to see the landscape as I saw it. When I was AG at that time, I saw it all, from the highest levels of government to the local superintendent. And the lesson is, if you stand up and you fight back, we can win. We can be successful. And what people want more than anything, Jesse, what they want is authentic leadership. They want to know that there's people that are going to fight for them, not permanent Washington or the Washington consensus, but the people in so-called flyover country in states like Missouri. They're tired of this stuff, and they want fighters.
Yeah, speaking of Missouri, you left the AG post of Missouri, and now your United States Senator, Andrew Bailey, who I like very much, he's apparently leaving, and he's going to be co-director of the FBI. Is there anybody left to be AG of Missouri?
Well, yeah, listen, the show me state, we punch above our weight class, I feel like. And so Andrew's going to do, he'll do a great job at the FBI, and hopefully can help clean up that place too.
What do we do about the judges? Yeah, every day we wake up, I know you do the same thing, we wake up and there's a new judge that did something crazy, we're screaming at our phones, but they're still judges, you know, you're not voting for them. How do we get these people out? Because we can't survive like this if there's a network of judges who are working against the country at all times.
Well, let me give a little bit of at least an optimistic view of this. So what happens typically when people get upset is they'll see that district court ruling. But as these cases, President Trump, and again, last line of defense, why we wrote the book is you got to have the courage to fight back. My Solicitor General, speaking of Missouri, who was my Solicitor General, John Sowers, the Solicitor General of the United States of America now. So John knows how to fight and win. And by and large, they are winning. They got the Supreme Court to say, you can't do these universal injunctions anymore. It's a total abuse of authority that one judge in New Mexico can decide foreign policy for the president of the United States of America. So those are gone. President Trump, by and large, is winning on these deportation cases as they make their way through. And even on the personnel and programming, they've said, yeah, you can fire these USAID employees. And so I think along the way, look, there's some radical judges that Biden got in, but by and large, as they're making their way through the courts, President Trump is successful in his defense of his policies. That's good news, even though some of these individual decisions certainly are frustrating.
The book is Last Line of Defense. Senator, I appreciate you very much. All right. We have some Supreme Court happenings, so we had to bring Alex Sawyer back here to teach us what exactly those things are. Now would be a very good time to get your testosterone up, by the way. I'm talking about naturally. We have estrogen in our waters. Synthetic estrogens, we shower in them, we drink them, they're in the plastics. What are you doing about it? What are you doing about the fact that you're drinking a free-falling testosterone? That's what you're doing when you drink water. You have to keep drinking water. A male vitality stack from Chalk, 20% increase in your T levels in 90 days. I've had 70-some-year-old men email me and tell me their doctors are looking at their blood work saying, what in the world are you doing? You look like a 20-year-old. You want that? You want to feel like that? I do. Chalk.com/JesseTV gets you a fat 17.76% discount on subscriptions. Go get one. We'll be back. All right, we had Alex Sawyer on last week. She was awesome. She wrote that book, Lawless Lawfare, as you already know. And she gave us the skinny on all kinds of legal things going on. That was the good news. The bad news is there's so much freaking going on that we didn't get to like half of the cases that are really important. We covered the same-sex marriage stuff and all the other stuff last week. So let's go back to Alex again. Apparently, we're just going to hire her permanently and talk about these things. Author of the book Lawless Lawfare, Alex Sawyer, joins me. Okay, the court, what are they doing now? What's coming? Normal people like me don't understand this stuff.
Yeah, so right now the justices are on their summer recess, which basically means the end of June to the first week of October, they're out. We get about 4 updates from them in terms of order lists, cases that they're going to either hear or get rid of. Normally it's not too newsy until what's called the long conference. And so the long conference is usually the week before they return. They generally meet in private on Thursdays. And so we get a lengthy list the first Monday in October, any new cases that they might be adding to this term's docket. There's a couple that I'm watching that I can just flag for you. One actually has to do with 2 Christian schools in Florida who wanted to say a prayer over the loudspeaker, but were not allowed. And so there's 2000, from the year 2000, the Supreme Court had said a school prayer, you know, on the loudspeaker would violate the Establishment Clause. So you have these schools asking the justices to revisit that precedent and rule that they are able to speak freely at the First Amendment. They're both Christian schools. Why would they not be able to say a prayer? Of course, you and I touched last week on the same-sex marriage petition. whether or not the justices will go ahead and take up an opportunity to overturn same-sex marriage when they legalized it in 2015. That case is pending. And then, of course, there's going to be one that I think is going to maybe be the biggest case of the term in terms of precedent that could be overturned. The likelihood that it would be taken. Now, same-sex marriage would be huge if they did that, but most court watchers don't think they're going to take up that case. But this one has to do with Trump's ability to fire agency heads, these independent agency heads. He's already had to come to the Supreme Court a few times trying to remove a Biden appointees to like the National Labor Relations Board, the Consumer Product Safety Board, all of this. So there's like a 1935 case where the Supreme Court basically limited the president's power to fire these type of people at will, saying that there has to be some sort of independence from these agencies that Congress created. Now, our Supreme Court, the current Supreme Court, has gone ahead and sided with Trump over the last few months in his ability to do these firings. So there's been a lot of court watchers that say, hey, when this kind of case comes up before the merits and there's actually oral arguments on it, it's very likely that this Supreme Court will reverse that 1935 precedent.
Oh, gosh. Okay, I'm sorry. I have to pause for a second. They're off from June to October? What do they do?
Yeah, so it sounds like a really good job, doesn't it? I would love to have a 3 months. Yes, it's almost more than our lawmakers who love to be home all the time.
Okay. All right. Voting rights, ballot counting. Are these things coming?
Yes. So you bring up some very interesting cases. So there's already one case that's scheduled. There's a dispute out of Louisiana. This one was actually argued last term, and the justices put off issuing a ruling and have scheduled again for oral arguments. That usually doesn't happen. I don't remember that happening since I've covered the court in 2017. So essentially what this case is challengers have said that race was used when drawing the congressional map in Louisiana to make sure that there's two majority black districts. It took it from 5 majority like Republican controlled districts and 1 Democrat to now 4 Republican and 2 Democrat. So you have groups protesting the use of race when considering drawing these lines. It's kind of what I would say like a reverse case. You usually see minorities bringing the voting rights dispute saying, hey, we don't have adequate representation. This is kind of the opposite, saying, hey, violates the 14th Amendment to use race for drawing these district lines and that it was inappropriately done so by the state. So, you know, there could be, I'm expecting a ruling in this one, definitely by when the court wraps up its term in June, but this would be very huge. It could potentially take a big gut to Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which was used, you know, to try to correct decades of political oppression way back when. So if they change what you could use race for when drawing these congressional district lines, obviously that's huge. It would not just impact Louisiana, it would impact states across the nation. There's also a ballot counting dispute. Now this one is kind of, you're going to have to kind of stay with me on this. Illinois has a law where they're allowed to count mail-in ballots 14 days after Election Day. So federal candidates I know, 14 days, right? Not enough to, I guess people, you know, don't get their mail out in time. So that was challenged by federal candidates who say, no, like this is costing us, these election monitors we're having to pay for, we're suffering from that. There is one election day, and so we're challenging the state law. They lost in lower court, not on the law, but on the fact that the lower court said, well, you haven't had sufficient legal injury, basically what's called standing, to bring this lawsuit, that you didn't really have to pay these monitors that much. It's too early to sue before the 2024 election. And that's how they got rid of the case. So now it's at the Supreme Court on that issue. Do federal candidates really have the right to challenge these state laws? And if they don't, who would, right? So that's kind of what the justices will decide with this one case. There is a separate petition out of Mississippi dealing with mail-in ballots. That state allows ballots to be counted up to 5 days past Election Day. The RNC has challenged that. The Fifth Circuit had ruled that there is only one Election Day, basically striking down the Mississippi law, but let it stand on appeal. So now it's at the Supreme Court with Mississippi trying to defend its grace period law for receiving these mail-in ballots. Now, if the Supreme Court were to take this could change not just what Mississippi does, but states across the board. If the Supreme Court says, yes, we'll take this up, and no, a state cannot count ballots, you know, know, 5-14 days past Election Day, there is one federal election day, then of course that would make many states that have these grace periods have to change their law.
Alex, let's get away from the Supreme Court for a moment. In Virginia, are schools funding abortions for children?
That is the big news out of Northern Virginia. So it looks like in 2021, Centerville High School, there was a social worker, a school social worker, who must have facilitated at least two abortions for two minor female students, okay? So took them to the clinic. There's some reporting that the girls were coerced into doing it. Maybe they weren't, you know, for this. They were told they needed to. And there was a teacher who I believe it was confided in by these girls who flagged this, I believe, several times to principals and to school officials, yet it went unresolved. So what you have now is Governor Glenn Youngkin, who has ordered a criminal investigation into this, into the school district, about whether these funds, you know, local, state, federal tax dollars at the school were used to facilitate student abortions. Right now, we have no update. There's actually questions about exactly which abortion facility they were taken to. There's a lot of reporting on the ground happening. So it does seem like where there's smoke, there's fire. And we know these Northern Virginia schools have had quite issues with parental rights and respecting those. You can remember the whole bathroom incident with letting transgender student into the female bathroom. The one female student was raped, and the one father who was actually kicked out of the school board meeting over that. I think that everybody rings a bell. Everyone remembers that dispute. So yes, these Northern Virginia schools definitely need to have some sort of investigation, and it looks like that's ongoing with this one Centerville High School.
Northern Virginia sounds like hell. Alex, thank you. I appreciate it. Just thinking back to that tranny bathroom story and that rape of that young girl is just the worst freaking thing in the world. And then, of course, the dad gets arrested. These freaking communist men. All right, let's talk to John Phillips. Is Adam Schiff in serious legal jeopardy because of all this mortgage fraud stuff? Wouldn't that be hilarious if that turd went down for mortgage fraud? Before we get to that, let me get to your phone, your mobile company. You know, corporate America, that's one, you know, we talked about institutions at the beginning of the show. Corporate America is one of the institutions the communists conquered. That was an institution he was never going to let just sit there, all that money, all that power and influence. He conquered it. And that's why you've seen Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile consistently take part in the culture wars against you. I remember all the LGBTQ propaganda, the George Floyd stuff paid for by you. My company doesn't do that. I was talking to somebody this weekend. He's a living Medal of Honor recipient. He was hanging out with the Pure Talk boys. That's who Pure Talk cares about. You, America, American heroes, veterans. Switch to the cell phone company that hires Americans and loves America. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Sometimes I notice things. Most of the time I'm too stupid to notice things, but sometimes I do notice things, and I can't help but notice online, if you're at all on social media, I'm not saying you have to be, Gavin Newsom is spending money already. He is very clearly spending money doing some kind of bizarre and not funny online propaganda campaign, but that's not important. What they're actually doing is not important. They're spending money in 2025. Boy, Gavin Newsom is all in for president. Joining me now, somebody quite familiar with that lizard person, John Phillips of the great John Phillips Show. John, I know you've noticed it. I've noticed it. They're spending money. None of this is organic. They're spending money already? 3 years ahead of time?
Sure. Well, he wants to be president, and he knows that this is his opportunity to get out in front of all of his other competitors in the Democratic primary. And Gavin Newsom is of the belief that we are in a post-cancel culture world where there are no guardrails. You can say whatever it is that you want to say. There will be no consequences. The benefit of signaling the Democratic voters that you are the fighter and you are willing to do anything to win outweighs any potential drawbacks of saying reckless things. Over the last few days on social media, he was suggesting that the assassination attempt of Donald Trump was fake. There were pictures of him holding up a bottle of ketchup with the Secret Service around him and ketchup on his ear. He's been attacking fire victims who have been complaining that the response from the state was not adequate. He's attacked members of the legislature in very personal sexual terms. And what's happened? He shot up in the polls in the Democratic primary, and he has spiked his engagement on social media. The number of people now following him, liking his tweets, retweeting what he's saying is now through the roof. And he now sees himself as the leader of the pack in the Democratic primary. Now, with all of that being said, this is not without potential pitfalls, because he has turned over the keys to his social media accounts to very young, very left-wing people who have been told to rattle the cage and say whatever to generate engagement. Well, we know people like this in our own lives. We see them on social media themselves. They're reckless. It's only a matter of time before Gavin Newsom tweets something like, well, you know, the Jews were really responsible for the Holocaust, or something along those lines, and then it's all over. So it's fun for him now, but guess what? There's a reason why you don't turn over your social media accounts to teenagers craving attention.
Yeah, you know what? Mr. Producer, go ahead and record that little segment, because you know it's coming. You know it's coming. These savages have nothing holding them back. Okay, so let's talk about the effectiveness of it, because as you mentioned, he's trying to win a primary right now, right? You got to win that to get to the general. His numbers, at least now, it's early, have shot up. So did that prove him right?
In the short term, yes. But let me refer back to a conversation I just had last week with Fox 11's Alex Michelson, who was interviewing Gavin Newsom at one of these press conferences. And Gavin was standing there taking questions, and he asked Gavin a question about something that he had tweeted earlier that day. And Gavin Newsom had no clue what he was talking about. And so Alex had to go back and find the tweet and read the tweet and then have Newsom respond to it. But it was clear that Newsom had never seen that tweet before. So not only are the teenagers responsible for putting the tweets out, they're not even informing him of what they're tweeting when they're tweeting it. At some point, this is going off the rails and the car is going into the ocean. I will make that prediction right now on your show.
Okay, so on a macro level, let's do the best we can to get out of our bubbles here and zoom out. I understand I'm too biased to probably answer this question, but I like Donald Trump. I certainly don't worship him, but I like him. I have an affinity for him. I like a lot of his policies. He makes me laugh. And I just despise everything about Gavin Newsom. In my opinion, what Donald Trump says works because it's authentic. He'll say and do some horrible, horrific, stupid stuff, but gets away with it because it's authentically him. As you just laid out, it's not authentically Gavin. So is it doomed to failure because of that?
I think so. Because keep in mind, Trump was a known quantity even before he got into politics. We knew him from The Apprentice. We knew him from Howard Stern. We knew him from WrestleMania. We knew him from Home Alone. And the guy was the same throughout his entire public persona, or his entire public time in the public eye. Gavin Newsom, not long ago, was trying to brand himself as the Democrat who can talk to Republicans. He had a podcast where he had Charlie Kirk on, and Michael Savage, and Stephen Bannon, and others. And that was how he was trying to present himself. And then it didn't work out. And then he recalibrated and decided that he was going to take this gentry class winemaker from San Francisco and turn him into the ghost of Paul Lynde, where every single tweet is something you'd hear at drag queen bingo. And suddenly we're supposed to buy that as authentic. Just imagine for one second, because Gavin Newsom is a guy who is known for making these big grandiose proclamations and having zero follow through. You know, he was the guy that when Arizona decriminalized, or when Arizona made abortion illegal, he was going to allow abortion providers to come to California to perform abortions. He made a big deal out of that. You know how many abortions actually happened from Arizona providers? Zero. He just moved on and pretended like it didn't happen. He was the guy who came out after George Floyd and said, California is going to have reparations. And we're going to be the first state that really just puts the flag in the ground on that subject. You know how many reparations we paid? And so the problem for Gavin Newsom on the Democratic primary stage is going to be that he is inauthentic and a flake. And this lobotomy, this personality lobotomy that he's gone through right now is only going to feed into that. Because when he's standing there and AOC is at the podium next to him, she's going to say, I want transgendered athletes on every basketball court in America. How about you, Gavin? I want to make sure that every illegal alien has whatever resources they need from the taxpayers, and I certainly want to abolish ICE. How about you, Gavin? And they try to pin him down on all of these things when Gavin Newsom has been all over the board his entire career and certainly hasn't followed through with any of his big proclamations in California. What he's doing now benefits him in the short term, but he is opening himself up in the Democratic primary in all kinds of ways for someone from the left to really expose him.
Does his record in California, which is awful, you know, as you well know, but every California friend I have says the same thing. California, he sucked at this, he sucked at that. But does that matter? I know it matters to politicos like us, but primary voters, general election voters, do they look at your record as governor and say, wow, you can't be president? I don't know. I'm skeptical on that, but that matters to the people.
Yeah, I don't think that's relevant. Because Democrats regard his failures in California as a distraction to the big issue, which is hating Donald Trump. So they're willing to forgive him for all of that. And then look at how the news media will cover him. He says that the bullet train is a success. The bullet train, for example, was supposed to be completed years ago, and no one has been able to ride the bullet train because the bullet train doesn't exist. It's gone way over on cost. It's never actually going to be completed, but he says it's a success, and the fact checkers will back him up. And when those of us say, hey, this is a train that doesn't actually exist, we will be called conspiracy theorists, or we will be called people who are part of the doom loop, or whatever the case may be. When he says the insurance market is fine in California, but none of us can buy it, or they're kicking us off our policies, the fact checkers will back him up and say that he's right. Fact checkers will say there's no crime in California, that we just have to buy shampoo through bulletproof glass because, I don't know, it looks better that way. He will make all of these ridiculous claims, and all of the big newspapers will validate his absurd proclamations. So I don't think that part will bother him at all.
Okay. Is Adam Schiff going to prison? I saw that he started a legal defense fund, which is quite a thing for a sitting United States senator. Is he sweating?
That's where he belongs. He claimed that his residence was in Maryland when he applied for a loan to get a better rate. You can't legally be the resident of another state and represent the state of California in the United States Congress. That is illegal. You have to be a resident of the state. So one of those things is not true. Either he can resign from Congress because he's not a resident, or he committed bank fraud. People in California, politicians in California, have gone to jail over residency issues. There was a state senator by the name of Rod Wright who got nailed for that. There was an LA city councilman by the name of Richard Alarcon who got nailed for that. There's no difference at all between what those two did and what Adam Schiff is doing, which is lying about your residence to benefit one way or the other. If they apply the law equally, then Adam Schiff should go to jail.
Wow. What a day that would be. John, thank you, buddy. All right. It's time to lighten the mood. And I have to be honest with you, I'm at a very dangerous age in my life. That dangerous age is, I'm 44, so I don't feel old yet. But if we're being honest, I'm not as young as I used to be, not as injury resistant as I used to be. Remember when you were a kid and you could jump off a 50-story building and not break anything? Obviously, I'm exaggerating, but you remember what that was like? And so I'm at that age where I'll do things like this.
Hey, bro, is this your bike?
Yeah.
It's your bike. How do you get on it?
I'm skipping a jump.
Yeah?
Yeah. There's a peg on the bottom.
Can you show us? He's alive.
I'll see you tomorrow.